Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pinier, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco. And this week, Kevin and I are flying solo as we prepare for the All-Star game next Monday night. And Kevin, you weren't here with me last week when the All-Star rosters came out. Let's talk a little bit about that first before we jump into this week's show. Your thoughts on just overall what you thought about the teams and the guys selected?
First of all, I want to say congratulations to everybody that was selected to participate in the game next Tuesday night. Home Run Derby's on Monday night. We do not have any word on who the participants will be, and I don't think we'll know till on the night of the Home Run Derby. But be that as it may, I thought there were some snubs, and I thought that I love Chris Coase and Anthony Barone, but I thought they both went a little bit too heavy on their own players.
I do have to say, in looking at the article that I wrote on players that I felt kind of got snubbed, everybody that's on that team, I feel a good case can be made for. I don't dispute that. And I actually had quite a lengthy conversation with Anthony Barone about his selection. And he laid out why he went with each one of his guys, each guy on the team in general, I'm going to say. But there were guys like Gio Diaz, who you and I have talked about quite extensively over the last month, a guy, huge batting average, second in the league in stolen bases, having a phenomenal season for Gary Southshore. I was kind of surprised he didn't go. Two of the catchers out in the West, Roskam and Gavin Collins, I was kind of stunned neither one of those guys got a call, but. No offense to the two guys who led their teams to the championship series last year. Obviously, good skilled guys out there for sure. It's just I kind of look at it, Kevin, and I just think eight guys from one team on a 24-man roster sounded a little much, I would say.
I thought so too, especially both sides of it. I thought the cases were more solid for the Milwaukee players than they were with the Fargo players, but I just can't believe you got somebody like a Charlie Hasty, who's leading the entire league in saves, on a team that doesn't win a ton of games. Respectable ERA at 3.74, and he's not on the team. But as we're recording this earlier tonight, Akeem Bostic, who was selected for the team, left the game with a hamstring injury. So I'm thinking if that's going to be something that's going to disable Bostic for any amount of time, don't be surprised if Charlie Hasty gets the call in his place. Sean Rakowski, Sioux City, 10 saves, 2.08 ERA. He's had 24 appearances. I don't know how he's not on the team. I know you don't want to go a little too heavily on closers, but frankly, I think the league is stronger this year in relief pitchers than they are with starters. When I was making my selections, taking my top three guys from every team, I was hard-pressed to find a starter that just really wowed me and said, yeah, that guy's got to be there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, Christian Young obviously had a huge stretch, Kevin, where he was just absolutely phenomenal. Struggled a little bit recently. While I had looked at a couple weeks ago about we're not seeing the dominant closers like we have seen in previous seasons in terms of just pure save numbers that you're looking at, I think we've seen a lot of outstanding middle relief so far this year. And so there could have been six, seven guys that, or maybe even more, that could have been, your seventh, eighth inning guys that could have made the team out there. And still, there's still a lot of closers over the last couple of weeks who have really stepped up their game. You mentioned Rakowski, who was winning a bunch of games for Sioux City early on in the year because the team was winning games late, and he was the guy who was coming away with victories out of that. Well, now he's getting saves because they're taking huge leads, and he's saving them for the team. So, I get that there are a lot of starters out there, and guys want to give credit to those for the starters for the performance that they're having. But, don't forget those relievers who were having great years.
Here's a stat I'll throw at you here. Of the players that are eligible inning-wise for the ERA title, granted, they're all going to be starters, there are only six pitchers in the league that are under an ERA of 3. So that right there tells you that there's that maybe the strength in this league when it comes to pitching is out of the bullpen.
And consider, I think, aren't all 6 of those guys from the same team now? Our same 2 teams? Or as far they were, at least at one point recently. So it's like two dominant pitching staff.
Yeah, 3 of them are from Milwaukee and 3 are from Kane County.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's like 2 staffs have been great and everybody else is kind of a little mediocre right now.
So, yeah, that's, you know, that tells me that, you know, maybe the strength is in the guys that are coming out of the bullpen. I was happy. I mean, there's no way you could have denied him, but Daniel Beast of King County, I'm glad that he got the nod. I mean, what a season he's having. 28.2 innings, ERA of .31. I mean, that's just barely higher than
Crazy?
Google McCarthy's great point average.
You know, and too, talking about some of the relievers out there, Peyton Gray doesn't have a 0 ERA like he did back in 2020, but it's like still under 1. I mean, I think he's given up 1 run in 15 innings or something ridiculously absurd like that. It's like there are some relievers didn't make the team, you know, and I get it. He in Milwaukee, Anthony Barone chose for the East Division 4 of his starters, well-deserving as well. I mean, 4 of those guys, probably, again, the top pitching staff in terms of starting rotation in the East Division for sure, if not the entire league. In what he's getting out of his guy. So I get that, but I was thinking, man, Peyton Gray didn't make this team. He's been virtually untouchable this year and really rebounded well. 1.68 ERA. Okay, so 3 runs in 16 innings with 7 base runners, 4 hits and 3 walks in 16 innings. That's just crazy to me, you know? And I think, man, again, probably 5-6 guys out of this Milwaukee pitching staff could have gone, but, you're right. The strength of this league right now has become the bullpen. And outside of 2 pitching staffs, there's maybe a handful of guys I would look at right now, Kevin, that are starters and go, well, you have a sure ace on the team, on the hill right now when your guy's going for you. I really feel like there just isn't the same group of starters that we've seen in, you know, 2-3 years ago.
Look at 2 of the pitchers from the West that Chris Coles chose. Correll Prime, 4.73 ERA. Jared Dykoff, 5.15 ERA. I just have a hard time taking those guys when there are good bullpen arms out there that did not get a look. I know you try to be fair to the starters, but let's say you're actually trying to win the All-Star game. You know, unless God forbid the game go deep into extra innings, most of your guys are going to at most throw 2 innings. So I think I would want to go a little heavier on the relief pitching, especially when it's justified. I get it. If you have a lot of really good starting pitching in this league, sure you'd want to showcase them, maybe give them 2 innings. But right now that's not the case in this league. The strength in this league is middle to late relief.
Yep, I agree with you. And if you got caught up in some guys that you're saying, well, I really want another starter or something here for whatever reason you got going on there, you know, until recently there were a couple of guys even in Kansas City who were having big numbers. Dalton Moats was pitching extremely well. Not Moats. It's who's the guy? Who's the other guy here in Kansas City that was having Cody Deason. Is that the, yeah. Cody Deason has been pitching pretty well for Kansas City as well. He took a little bit on the chin with a 4 runs over 4 innings in his last start against Sioux Falls. But this is a guy prior to that had a 3.15 ERA, but didn't make the All-Star game. I thought, well, okay, that number looks pretty impressive to me for a guy who helped to get Kansas City rolling here. So it's an age-old question, Kevin.
You want another Please. Testament to the fact that the strength of this league is in the hitting and maybe a late relief? Kansas City, who's by far the best team in the league right now, no pitcher with an ERA under 3.
Exactly right. That is a big testament to what's going on right now in the American Association. And, you know, again, it'll be an entertaining game. We're going to see a good home run derby out there. But I think right now, and you and I will talk about predictions later on in terms of who we think will win the game. But, you know, the East looks like it's a little more formidable because of that starting staff that they got right there. So, but we'll talk about that more later on, Kevin. Well, Kevin, let's talk about other news going on around the American Association before we jump into the teams themselves. And two big news pieces that the league came out with. The first of these was that they were joining this confederation of a few different baseball leagues out there that they were calling the Baseball Champions League that will host a championship series that will consist of 2022 winners from each of the leagues, which includes the American Association, I believe this is the Mexican Baseball League that we had right there, the Cuban National Series winner, and the Colombian Professional Baseball League winner from 2022. I'm not exactly sure why they decided to jump back a year, but okay, that's fine. I know that Josh Schaub, the commissioner of the American Association last year, was telling me he was looking for a home run. He had a home run for me before last season. I'm assuming this is the home run he was talking about. So your thoughts on a big series like that down in Mexico?
Well, here I am. I'm going to be the cynic of the bunch. And I'm sorry if there are any answers to this. Great. I'm glad you're thinking ahead. And I did see Josh Schaub today on LinkedIn did post that this may be his greatest achievement as commissioner. So be it. That's great. But within that, there's going to be a lot of questions to answer with this. First of all, if you're the defending league champions and you're in competition with another pretty good team to recruit a player next year, is it fair that that one team gets to dangle the carrot of, well, if you come play for us, you're going to get to play in a really neat tournament at the end of the season. Regardless of how well the team does, you get to be in that tournament. I know that we're trying to be fair with a salary cap that's equal for every team, but I just think that's a perk that is going to be potentially, if you want to call it, an unfair way to recruit a guy to your team. Now, you look at the tournament itself, and I thought I saw right, maybe there's going to be some off days, but if not, 7 games in 4 days. We know how tight a lot of these pitching staffs are. So, is Fargo going to be able to, let's say, maybe do a little bit of work and say, well, Jack Fox, you want to pick up a couple more starts, we'll make you a Red Hawk for this tournament. Will Fargo be able to go in and get, like, some reinforcements so that they got enough pitching to get through this tournament? And another thing, when you're negotiating your contracts, you're negotiating with the player for the season. I really wonder what the compensation is going to be for these guys for playing in this tournament. Because let's be honest, a lot of times these guys will play their season and they want to get the heck out of town as soon as the season's over. You don't see a lot of championship parades a few days after the tournament or after the season. That's because the guys have gotten the heck out of town. And let's say perhaps, and the way it's looking right now, it wouldn't happen because they have struggled mightily. But let's say Fargo-Moorhead wins the Miles Wolf Cup again this year. So now you put them through a grueling playoff schedule, and then you're going to send them to Mexico to play another 7 games in potentially 4 days. That's a real tough grind on these guys. So I don't know. I might get an Instagram from one of the Joshes saying, yeah, we got this all figured out. Just shut your mouth. Whatever. But I just felt like that's something you got to throw in. I really hope that they've done their homework on this and have all the contingencies taken care of. If so, it's going to be a great showcase for the league. If not, it's going to be a heck of a mess. I hope it's more the former than the latter.
You know, Kevin, those are all outstanding arguments. And then there's the other argument to it, too, is that let's say Fargo doesn't make the playoffs at all or gets knocked out right away. And so everybody went home. You know, then 2 weeks later, you're like, hey, everybody, come back and let's go play baseball. And I'm like, no, I don't want to go down here now. I'm done for the year.
Go ahead, finish your thought because I have another one.
No, go ahead.
Let's say Fargo was somehow out of it when it comes to trade deadline time. What do you do there? Do you keep guys around thinking that, well, we really can't build futures for next year because we're going to need everybody we can to go play this tournament? You know, it's going to really, it could potentially affect the way they go about business during the regular season.
Absolutely, and you want to start preparing for next year, but you can't do so. Yeah, maybe. You know, I don't know. Or you're sending a team of less than formidable, you know, players down to go battle on behalf of the American Association. You know, Kevin, I got to honestly tell you, when I talked to Josh about this right at the starting of last season, I asked him, why isn't, you know, wouldn't that be cool? Because he had given me kind of a hint that there was something big coming up. And I said, man, so you're going to have like an Atlantic League, Frontier League, maybe even Pioneer League with the American Association competing to see who's the best team. You know, who can lay claim this year to be the best independent partner league, baseball league in baseball. Okay. And he said, no, Rob, I got a home run for you. And I thought, so when I read this, I thought, well, okay. I mean, I don't know about you, Kevin, but we hear, no matter what league you're involved in or whatever, there are some are going to say American Association way better than Atlantic League and vice versa kind of thing. And I thought they would go settle that somehow or another. So, I mean, great. This looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I honestly was a little disappointed in this choice. Great exposure for the league, like you said. But I look at this and I kind of think to myself, okay, well, how does this benefit partner league baseball, I guess, is really, or settle something in partner league baseball, I guess, is the question to ask.
I guess they're hoping that there's going to be media coverage of this, and it could be a showcase for players that are on the other teams that are going to see that, hey, you know what, these American Association guys can play ball. Maybe that's an option for me next year if I want to play in America. But I wonder also, for the same reasons that it would be tough to do like a World Series thing with the Atlantic League and the Frontier League, what are the other leagues in this tournament going to have for roster rules? Is one team going to be at a disadvantage because they have to have so many rookies, they can only have 6 veterans? Meanwhile, another team's got like 14 or 15 of them. So you hate to see it where these other teams playing it are stocked up in veterans and then just end up crushing Fargo Moorhead or whoever goes down there in future seasons.
You know, Kevin, and not to cast aspersions on any country, but I know coming out of that Cuban league, we've had some disparity of ages and other things that have been said over the years. So, you know, if a guy claims he's not a vet, but he is, how do you know? I mean, okay. And so, I think you and I could look at this and go, there's a thousand things that could go wrong with this thing. So, but you and I, because we're the positive American Association loving guys that we are, I think we're, you know, going to kind of ride this out. We'll have Josh or both on later on to talk to us a little bit more about how this looks and answer some of these questions for us. You know, we're here in the early stage of this kind of thing, and there is a lot of questions to be answered, but Josh Schaub is no idiot. I mean, that's the honest answer that we got to give about this kind of thing. And I believe that if he's putting the league in this, he's made a lot of really smart moves so far, Kevin. And you got to go with, you know, in Josh we trust, so to speak, here.
Well, I think in theory, yeah, it was a smart move to make the jump and get involved, but you hope that the homework is done and that the American Association will be represented in the best way possible and not just be a roadkill for whoever they take on. So, you know, I guess it's take the bid now and then worry about the problems as they come up. But you know me, I'm always one that kind of looks at the, I'm more of a big picture guy. And to me, right away I thought, okay, how is this going to be handled? How are we going to handle this? Like I said, you know, I might get a long text or a nasty gram from one of the Joshes, so be it. But I just think if we would just blindly say, oh, golly, gee, this is great, I can't wait for it to start, and not address anything, then who are we? That'd be foolish on our part.
Yeah, very true. And I do want to say that, you know, we kid Josh and Josh sometimes about them being on our backs, but they have been very receptive to answering our questions about things. And so I'm sure at some point the two of them will say, hey, we'll happily answer your questions and make sure you're plenty clear on how this thing is going to look. And we'll love to hear that. So, we're not going to die on it. Go ahead.
I went to look for answers in the press conference today, and the only words I understood were American Association and Fargo-Moorhead.
Yeah, where's our translator for that thing out there? So that would have helped. Oh, Kevin. Well, let's jump around the league here. We'll talk about players of the week while we're going through teams. And let's begin with the Kansas City Monarchs. So you mentioned out there holding the top record in the American Association at 34-18, holding a 3-game advantage over the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks. Yeah, you know, Kevin, I'm eating crow. Okay, I'm gonna honestly tell you, because I looked at this lineup starting out of the season, and I thought to myself, there's a lot of question marks here. I mean, a lot of them. The pitching staff had a lot of question marks to me, and I thought, well, okay, they're going to make the playoffs because they're Joe Calpapietra, so I have no doubt about that. But Brian O'Grady with a 3-homer game this week, this is a guy he signed just a couple weeks ago already, having huge impact on the team, 15 RBI in 11 games for this club. Odubel Herrera, another guy, a couple weeks with the team, hitting .328 and driven in 7 runs for the team. We talk about Joe as a guy who always finds a way. I honestly am getting to the point of thinking, I don't think there were enough accolades for this guy to talk about what a job he does there in Kansas City.
It's crazy when you, excuse me, when you look at the roster and just think, wait a minute, how do all these guys have experience with Major League ball clubs and still come together as a team in Kansas City, and it all works with the salary cap, which I'm guessing it's probably because the Monarchs have such a reputation for getting teams back in the organization that a lot of these guys have probably taken a lot less money than they could have somewhere else just to get into the system and try to work their way back into a Major League organization. You know, we talked about this team before the season, and some of it might just be our ignorance because, let's face it, you and I both, we have tunnel vision when it comes to baseball. We follow this league, and we don't follow much else. So we probably didn't know just exactly how good this team could be because we don't keep up on guys that have played in the major leagues for, like, a brief amount of time. Other than Chris Herrmann and Herrera, there are no other ex-big leaguers on the team that I could think of that was like, oh, yeah, I remember him well.
Very good point. And, you know, I want to tell you, it's the kind of guys that he brings in, too. Very shrewd move. And when I was when I saw this originally, this move go on, I thought, oh, well, he's returning his team. And then I thought, wait a minute, he chose Kansas City. And that was Pete Maris, who had a monster year last year for the Redhawks. And then all of a sudden signs in Kansas City. And I thought, oh, wow, what a great move that was right there. And, you know, he's off to a solid start right now. Maris was a guy who got hotter as the season went along last year, and I'm expecting that kind of thing for him this year. But I just look at the moves, and I think to myself, wow, a lineup where you have Chris Herrmann, who's one of the top two or three players in the league right now. Odubel Herrera is pitching great. Justin Wiley is playing great for this team. Gavin Collins, the backup catcher, has been phenomenal. And then we mentioned O'Grady with a three homer week. Now you got Pete Maris on the team. This is a very solid deep team, and we haven't just even seen Yan Hernandez do anything yet, Kevin. So this team could be even better 2-3 weeks from now.
I don't see anything wrong with what you just said, and frankly, I see this team running away with the West Division. I think it's going to be much like 2 years ago, where it's going to be Kansas City and everybody else is just kind of along for the ride.
The number two team in the rankings this week, Kevin, it might be a runaway in the East right now, as Milwaukee 31-20, holding a 5.5 game lead over the Cleveland Railroaders and Chicago Dogs. This is another team I look at. That starting staff is so good. I mean, I just, as good as you can have, I think we've seen in a while in this league, since that Winnipeg group with McGovern and Lampson and them 5 years ago, I guess it is now. This is maybe the deepest starting staff that I have seen. Great bullpen, getting timely hitting. This Milwaukee club looks like it seems like almost a foregone conclusion of Kansas City and Milwaukee in the championship series now.
You would think in theory, but let's just remember when we get to the playoffs, you only got to be better than the other team 2 out of 3 games. But if you're looking at talent right now, yeah, it's definitely Kansas City. I'm sorry, Milwaukee has risen to the top of the East Division. You talk about a couple games of offensive dominance in a row they had when they put 15 on Fargo-Moorhead on Thursday night. Show up in Winnipeg about 4:30 in the morning. You're thinking maybe the eyes are going to be a little tired. They're not going to hit much on Friday. Oh, no. 16 more runs against Winnipeg. So, it was, you know, it's been a traditional tough road trip for teams going to Fargo and then to Canada. Milwaukee, Ham the Great, came out at 4-2 and they're putting some distance between themselves and Cleburne. So I don't have any reason to believe that you're wrong when you say it could be KFC and Milwaukee for the championship.
You know, part of what's impressive about this group too, Kevin, is we touted what a big move that was to get Jose Fuentes to start the season. He did not work out for them. And you think, wow, well, that was kind of a big loss for this club to not have him. Kyle Mora has struggled at times. It's just consistency, it looks like, for him right now. When he's on, he's on. I mean, that guy's as good as it gets right now. It's just kind of getting that consistency. Juan Echeverria, coming out of the bullpen, has looked ridiculous, you know, for them. And I'm thinking, they're 7 deep here if they really wanted to go with starters. I mean, they have that kind of a pitching staff right now. I just don't think anybody can really top them. I get the point you're making, which is an awesome one. 2 out of 3, it doesn't matter how many great starters you have. You just have to win 2 of those games. And if, you know, all you need is Christian Young to not have a great game 1 or whatever, and you're in a lot of trouble at that point. But in terms of locking in that top spot in the division, you know, other than King County, who's got a very good pitching staff but not the same kind of hitting, nobody can touch this team. And I just think that Anthony Barone has shown himself to be a guy like Joe Calfapietra that you just go to and turn and say, I just don't have enough good things to say about Anthony. He really comes out with great moves all the time. And he makes Milwaukee a fun team to watch. You know, it's not like they're boring in any way and they win in 1-0 games. They win games in an exciting, fun way. It's great baseball, and I have to give credit to him for the great job he's done.
You know, I'm pouring over the stats right now. Ryan Zimmerman's probably off to the best start of his career, going 6-1 with a 3.67 ERA. And that rotation right now, you probably have to consider him to be a number 4 starter. And that tells you there's some serious talent there. And I don't think it's a coincidence that when we talked about King County, Milwaukee, that the top 6 ERA guys in the league belong to those 2 ball clubs.
Well, Kevin, let's go to the number 3 team. And I want to say I applaud you for this pick right here, because this is the 3rd best team in the American Association. I'm Lincoln Salt Dogs have just been incredible over the last month. And as good as Kansas City and Milwaukee have been, I think Lincoln has been every bit as good as them, except for on the back end of that bullpen. Okay, that's been the one Achilles heel to this team. Looks like they got a little bit better pitching staff out of pitching performances out of that group this last week. But this is a very good ball club, and you and I expected good things out of them, and they have delivered.
It's been a real revelation, I think, as the season's gone along, just how good this ball club has become. And I don't think it's any fluke right now that they're the number three team in the power rankings. I mean, you look at their offense now, and yeah, exactly. The reigning hitter of the week right now is Luke Roskam. Yeah, I can remember he had a game-winning hit against Sioux City and a couple weeks back, and I remember our good friend Dan Vaughn goes, they gave up a hit to a catcher hitting .264 batting ace. And I'm thinking, well, come on, Dan, he's not as bad as he may think. And now he's got the batting average up to .307 with 36 runs batted in.
That might have been his incentive to get himself going. But as Kevin mentioned, player of the week, .542 batting average, 13 hits and 24 at bats. He has 5 runs scored, 8 RBI. He homers 3 times during the week as well. It was really a competition between him and Nick Anderson to be the player of the week. We wound up going with Roskam. As you mentioned, Kevin, a guy did not make the All-Star team. We should mention that right now. I think the second best catcher in the West Division for sure. A guy who had a very solid performance for Lincoln in his short stint with them at the end of last season. But I wasn't looking for this guy, to be honest with you, to be at, I was thinking 250, 260 this season. I think he's exceeded expectations and has really been that additional offensive catalyst to keep Lincoln moving in their lineup. And, you know, this is a team right now that I look at and I just don't see a lot of weaknesses to right now. I think they could be a team that stuns people in the playoffs.
You know, looking at the stats, you don't see a lot of staggering home run numbers other than Nick Anderson. But what you have is you have a lot of balance, especially amongst the top, you know, 6 guys in the lineup. And I'd like to see Zane Zerbrook gets stay healthy and get some more consistent playing time, because he's been very good in the chances that he's had to play. And it tells you something about your team where your 2 or 3 regulars that are lowest in the batting average are Nate Sampson, Aaron Takis, and Will Kenter, 3 guys that have proven they're good hitters in this league. So if you get those guys cooking along with the rest of them, it's going to be a dangerous salt dog team, and I think it's a team that's going to make a very good point to be a second-place team in the West and a scary team to play in the playoffs.
I should mention Lincoln's 3rd in the West Division, 27-24, 6.5 games behind Kansas City, half game behind Fargo for the 2nd spot. The hottest team, though, in the league right now at 8-2 in their last 10. We though go to the hottest team, we really should say, 7 game winning streak for the Sioux City Explorers, a team, Kevin, that I think in previous seasons, a couple, you know, last year even if we looked at it, if John Nogowski leaves last year to go back to affiliate ball, this team would have really struggled. But they have completely rallied around one another and are taking losses in stride right now in terms of guys that they're losing on the pitching, you know, a guy gets hurt or whatever, they just roll with it right now. This has been the most impressive Sioux City Explorers team in terms of just battling that I think I've seen in years.
You know, the overall stats won't stick out at you and make you go, wow. But like you said, I think this team's been through a lot this season already, and they're just showing the perseverance that you're looking for in the ball club that you hope is going to make a pretty strong bid for a postseason run.
Now, I'm going to end our Sioux City discussion here, Kevin, after we talk about Pitcher of the Week here in a second, because I know that Steve Montgomery is probably sitting at home preparing to listen to this going, don't mention good things about us, because he hates it when we talk positively about his team. But we do want to say Trenton Toplakar named as the Pitcher of the Week after going 1-0 with a 1.23 ERA in his 2 starts. looked phenomenal. Great pitching battles he was in both games. A 0-0 tie between him and Marc-Andre Hebeck in Winnipeg before that game was won 2-1 by Sioux City. And then he comes out with a dominating complete game performance to earn his first victory of the week. Toplakar, we heard great things about him from Solomon Bates, and he's really been the real deal for this club.
You know, I could see this for their sake. You know, you'd like to get Mitchell Verberg healthy and back into his early season form. And if you do, well, you got quite a combination in the rotation of Toplakar, Verberg, and Solomon Bates. Jared Weatherby has thrown very well, too. So there's their scenario, too, once you get into the playoffs. If you're trotting three arms out that you feel really good about winning a game behind, it doesn't matter if you're second, third, or fourth place. You've got a chip and a chair at the table, and you got a pretty good hand to play.
Yeah, if you have three outstanding starters, you can go a long way. And Milwaukee showed that last year, getting all the way to the championship series, almost winning it all because of that. So you can milk that a long way. The number five team in the standings this week, in the rankings this week, Kevin, the Cleburne Railroaders. I got to jump back here. There we go. They are in second, tied for second place in the East Division at 27-27 on a five-game losing streak for this team right now. Suffered a huge loss when Jose Sermo returned to, I think went headed to Mexico, if I remember correctly. I'm going to look that up here in a second. But they signed this guy, Blaze Brothers, who's been pretty quality for them since joining the club, hitting 353 in his four contests. And right now it's just been lack of timely hitting, I guess, for them, that they haven't been able to continually keep arriving right now. But Cleburne's still in a pretty solid place in that division.
I think so. And the lineup is just as solid as ever. It sounds like Sermo is going to be back with the Railroaders at some point before the season's over with. So he's gone for a while, but not gone for good. It was funny when I saw Blaze Brothers get off to a hot start. I sent a message to Brad Allred asking, well, is he Ryan Hernandez version 2? Brad wasn't ready to appoint him that, but you're right. It's been a good start for Brothers in his professional career. And I tell you, that lineup, he's got a lot of good batters to look up to as he's begin professional career.
You look at the five-game losing streak and you go, wow, that this team might be in a little bit of trouble. But, you know, they lost 2 out of 3 to a very good Lincoln team. Sioux City is red hot right now. You got swept by the number, 4 games obviously being swept. You never want to see that kind of thing. But it's not like they're being blown out in games. You know, they lost 6-5 to Sioux City in the opener and then lost 1-0, lost 8-7 yesterday. It's those one-run losses they're taking. They're just not getting the right kind of timely hitting right now. And you get a guy like Sermo back who makes every part of this lineup better. I think he's that key piece that's the difference for them.
He is, and the thing I think you'd be concerned about a bit if you're Cleburne has got to be the starting rotation, because you got Cody Bollard leads the team in the starts and has got an ERA almost at 7.5. And Kevin Hilton's not doing like you had expected when you anointed him to be the pitcher of the year as the year started. But Casey Kalich has been the guys on the roster right now is probably the best starter by far. We should mention that Michael Marriott, who had 5 starts with the Railroaders to start the season with, was signed by Cincinnati and has already been called up to the Major League Ball Club. So another feather in the cap to the Railroaders organization there.
Absolutely. I think I'm going to hear every time Kevin Hilton's name mentioned that I chose him for Pitcher of the Year. I think that's going to happen all year long. Okay. Before we go down to the remainder of this list right now, this I feel right now in the American Association is the separation. I think when you get past Sioux City in that number 4 spot, I almost feel like the rest of this group is battling to try to get to a point of being considered a serious contender. The way that the Salt Dogs and Explorers have played recently has got them up to a spot I think most people would look at and go, wow, they have a legitimate shot, especially you're talking about the three starters for Sioux City. They can go out there and win a series for them, or two or three even. And Kansas City and Milwaukee look like, hands down, like the best teams out in their division. But I think when you get down to Cleburne, we're going to talk about Chicago right now, I feel like we don't see the same level of baseball that you see from those four teams right now. Is that an unfair assessment by me, do you think?
I was saying something similar a few days ago, man. It just seems like you have three tiers right now. You have your top four teams that are the cream of the crop. You got your middle four that are nipping at the heels of the top four and could be among the top four if you get on any kind of a streak, just like how Sioux City has. And then you get down to your 9 through 12 teams. That's when you start thinking, well, there's teams that are going to need to get a little bit of help in order to try to get up to the middle tier.
So the Chicago Dogs, Kevin, come in here in sixth in the rankings this week. They are tied with Cleburne with a .500 record at this point, 5.5 games behind Milwaukee, a team that's 4-6 over their last 10. They had a Chicago-like week for them, the way things are going. Take 2 out of 3 from Kane County at home, go to Sioux Falls and lose 2 out of 3. Did not get much offense other than the second game in Sioux Falls. I was a little surprised by that, but I don't feel, Josh Altman got out to a fast start and then was struggling and is, looking a little bit better, but there's no real force in this lineup right now that I think drives this team offensively, and maybe that's the reason why they're struggling right now.
I mean, Matt Botcher is having a great season batting .340, but that's at the top of the order, and you like to see more guys producing in the middle of it. They've had David Mayberry for 15 games, and he's shown promise that he could be an offensive force in this team. But after that, it's pretty inconsistent. There's some good numbers there, but you like to see a guy like Brendan Metzger doing a little more than hitting .233 and only 8 runs batted in. So Luke Mangieri's having a decent season. I think he kind of flies under the radar a bit with 12 homers, 39 RBIs, batting .288. But generally, it's not the kind of Chicago Dog lineup that we've been accustomed to in the past.
Now, they have an interesting scenario, Kevin, that I have not gotten an answer on how this will work out. So Dylan Rosa was acquired from Kansas City by Chicago. He was selected as a starter to the West Division All-Star team, obviously not in the West Division anymore. But nobody's given me an answer, and I have checked to find out if he'll be on the All-Star game at all, whether he's going to be back on the West Division since he was chosen, or out in the East, and how that will affect rosters from that point. My feeling at this point, by looking at it right now, is either they have to add, so it's going to be 25 players, and we're 24 chosen for every league, with Rosa being an extra for 25 in the West, after they replaced him. And then there's supposed to be a fan voting for the final player. So I don't know if there's going to be 26 on one roster, or DeRose is just kind of a hard luck loser out of this and not going to be on any team at all. So we'll be watching for that, Kevin. But I mean, I'm just curious, if you're the commissioner, how does Dylan Rosa, does he get in the game?
I would have him as a reserve with, obviously, as a Chicago Dog on the East Division side. So I don't think the players should be penalized by a transaction.
I love that idea. That's a fantastic thought. Number 7 in the rankings, Kevin, those suddenly deeply struggling Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks. Losers of 5 straight games, 6 out in the West Division. It looks like, Kevin, that all of these signings and injuries and things are finally taking their toll on this club.
It's been a real tough, tough stretch for this team, and I can't remember maybe in the COVID year in 2020 when they struggled mightily to start the season. I don't remember the last time I've seen a Red Hawk team on this sort of a stretch, and you know, for them, it was a tough time to once again have to battle the Kansas City Monarchs for three games. But, boy, this is a team that could use some help. Such a hole with when Dylan Thomas left and John Silviano's been out of the lineup for a while. Then Frankie guys are underperforming. Leo Pena's only batting 238. Carell Prime 234. BJ Lopez, he had a good batter with Christian Correa last year. BJ Lopez, I get a good defense, but only batting 198. So, you know, the offense has been a little underwhelming, and the pitching, it just seems like they're not able to find the arms that they need to replace the guys that got signed, like a Davis Feldman and Reed Burgenmeier. Seems like the guys they just brought in just haven't quite had it. And you got to think that there's probably going to be some more movement because right now what they got going is not working.
You know, and 2 weeks ago, you made a point, I think, that a lot of people have ignored out of this, which is the team might have been a little too quick on letting Ben LaVorsi get away. Releasing him, he signs with Chicago and is playing very well for them. But right now, they need some help offensively. And LaVorsi was a guy that you could count on to hit 280, 290, maybe even more for you. I mean, I'm not exactly sure what prompted that move for the club, but he was a guy you really could depend on. And with the fact that beyond McGovern and Grauer, Carell Prime hasn't been as formidable as he was for a stretch there. Dykoff has been hammered of late, and they're just not getting the same kind of outstanding starting pitching right now. Even in their bullpen, I'm still not really sure who's the closer for this team right now, Kevin. So I kind of a team I feel like in flux, trying to figure out who's doing what for this team.
Well, to answer your question with LaVorsi, at the time when they let him go, it was a favor because he was not getting much for playing time. And as tends to happen in baseball, as soon as you let a player go somewhere else to get playing time, the team that let him go starts getting hit with injuries. So it was just really bad timing. You're right. You definitely, I think, for their sake, would love to have LaVorsi back right now. He's a guy that could play some second base, and I think that is among the many holes right now in this lineup. So. But don't ever sit on this Red Hawks team. I know they have the ways of going out and finding good players. It just hasn't connected so far this year, but don't give up on them yet because I know that they're not going to give up themselves.
Number 8 in the rankings, a team that's playing right now and losing to the Sioux City Explorers, is the Lake Country Dockhounds, who entered tonight's action on a 5-game winning streak, 7 out, holding that 4th place spot right now, Kevin, which is pretty impressive for this team right now. 7-3 over their last 10. This is a team getting pretty solid performances, I think, throughout the entire roster out there. They come off a big week where they sweep Kane County, took 2 out of 3 in Gary. Man, watch out for those Dockhounds, you got to be thinking.
No doubt about it. It looks like it's the team that's going to put up some runs, too. I mean, look at the stats. You've got 6-7 guys that are hitting 293 or better. So I think with them being a relatively new team and they don't have the reputation of some of these other ball clubs, they tend to fly under the radar a little bit. But I don't think we're giving this club enough credit to something has been clicking with this team, and they've been on quite a roll lately. So, like you said, right now they're in the number 4 spot. Well, at this time last year, they were very, very deep in the standings and were already starting to trade guys like Gio Brusa. So, as a Doc Collins fan, you really got to like what you're seeing at this point.
And, you know, Kevin, talking about guys we haven't really paid as much attention to this team. Now, you and I have talked about Marcus Chu. He's been phenomenal for them. All 4 of their infielders, we should mention right now, hitting above 300 for this team. Brian Ray's been fantastic for them, had some big hits for them in the last few weeks. Blake Tiberi, made the All-Star team, has been phenomenal. I mean, this is the best season we've seen out of this guy. He's looked great. Demetrius Sims has played very well for this club. It's a very solid defensive team. It's a team that plays small ball when they need to. When they need big hits, they get them out of guys like Nick Banks, and they're getting really good starting pitching. I think better than we expected, because we weren't really sure how this rotation was going to come out. Marcus Schwerin, who's got into that rotation and has just been really fantastic, a guy you were mentioning to me today about a legitimate choice for pitcher of the week this week. This is a team that I really look at and I think to myself, wow, Ken Huckabee has really done a great job. And again, no disrespect for Jim Bennett. You and I love him greatly, think he's a great guy. But boy, Ken Huckabee has really got this team fired up.
He's been able to do something with this ball club. It looks like they've moved Augie Voigt into the starting rotation, and he's done well out there with a couple of six-inning efforts that have gotten him wins in both his outings. So, you know, he could be a guy that could be another top-end pitcher for this rotation. And you just got one or two of when are we going to see the Tyler Pike that we knew, like, from 3 or 4 years ago? Because he's given up 13 runs in the last 8 1/3 innings. Granted, he's had no decision in both of those outings, but still, you're just waiting to see where that dominating lefty was that we knew from Fargo Moorhead.
Let's move to King County. Kevin, 9th in the rankings. Been a very tough week for these Cougars as they lose 2 out of 3 to start the week on the road in Chicago, then are swept at Lake Country. Division rivals, Kevin. You always say those are games you got to at least come away with at least one of those games on the road. But, man, they really had a tough week.
It's a matter of where are you going to find the offense with this club. It just doesn't seem like they've rebounded from losing T.J. Bennett. Cornelius Randolph has missed, looks like, 10 games. He was a contributor to that offense last year and has not been able to get it going this year. So it looks like right now it's the offense that's holding them back. Jimmy Kerrigan's, the bat's starting to warm up a little bit, but still he's only at 234 for the year. And you got to wonder, sometimes you get in these situations with teams where the bats struggle, and after a while the pitching gets a little frustrated that they're not getting support, and the pitching tends to get off of their game a bit, and then you've got some real problems on your hands. So the key is for King County is to find some offense, whether you got to go out and get a guy or someone on the team right now gets hot.
Yeah, and you're not getting the same kind of starting pitching like you're talking about. Tyler Beardsley had a tough week in his one start. Weston Muir had a tough week in his one start. Jack Fox lost both starts that he had. His numbers were okay, but, you know, you gave up 5 runs in 12 innings this week, and that's just too much for this team. You're just not going to get too much offensive support. C.J. Eldred was hammered in both of his start or his one start this week, Kevin. 10 earned runs in 3 innings he gave up for the team. You know, I think they're asking a little too much of this pitching staff right now. And you mentioned this last year when the Railcats got off to a very good start with their pitching staff. They were number 2 in the league nearing the All-Star game and then just really went downhill after that. This is still a very young pitching staff, Kevin. I wonder if you look at them and think to yourself, can this group be mentally tough enough at such a young age to be able to handle having to win 2-1 and 3-1 games all the time?
I think that just makes it so tough on your pitchers when they go out there and they know that there's going to be such a fine line between winning and losing, because your offense just isn't going to give you much to work with. That's just not healthy for a pitching staff. And like I said previously, it's just a matter of finding some bats on this team and getting some pitchers some offensive support.
The Sioux Falls Canaries, Kevin, at number 10 in the rankings this week. They are 23-30, 5 games behind Sioux City and Lincoln for the number 3/4 spot in the West Division, 11.5 out of first. Have a tough start to the week. They lose 2 out of 3 against Kansas City. You know, nothing to hang your head low about, that kind of thing. But rebound nicely to take 2 out of 3 from Chicago to end the week out there at home. And pitching performances have gotten better. I mean, I the staff, I feel like, is on the cusp of keeping this team competitive right now. Am I being too optimistic there, do you think?
I think you have to like what you've seen from some of these young arms with Canaries. Guy like Seth Miller, who had to come in tonight when Akeem Bosic was injured, he's made a very good showing for himself. A guy that was a Division II baseball player with Augustana, and he's thrown well. Brady Stover, a cast-off from Fargo-Moorhead, 3.68 ERA. Jose Cruz has turned into a good setup guy with 3.24 ERA. Charlie Acia, who we talked about earlier, should be an all-star. He's been closing. And, you know, I thought it was encouraging yesterday. He got a very good start out of Tyler Culbreth. Mitchell Walters has been good his last two times out. Neil Lang has been serving both. So we know this team will hit. They just need the pitching to be okay, and they're going to win their fair share of games with some high scores. So, you know, the overall numbers are still not pretty as far as the staff goes, but in general, I think there are several things that Canaries fans can feel good about right now.
You know, the team had a 4.67 ERA last week, Kevin. And I know most people are going to look at that and think, man, that's a terrible ERA. But let's consider here for a moment. If you look around the league this season, this has not been a particularly impressive year in terms of ERA. Five teams have ERAs under five in the league so far this year. And Lincoln is teetering on that at 4.95, okay, to just barely stay under. And you're Sioux Falls. You know, you're playing 50 of your games at home. So I feel like if you get a 4.67 ERA out of your team and playing in Sioux Falls, you're going to have a legitimate shot to win a lot of games. And so if you're Mike Meyer, are you feeling pretty confident or a little more comfortable with your staff after the way they performed this last week?
I think you're a little more comfortable, but within that, I also think that if, you know, if there's an arm out there to be had that you think you should take a chance on, I think there's a lot of guys on staff that don't really have a fair argument to say that they should be untouchable as far as being released. So it'll be interesting to see who comes in especially now that the MLB draft has been completed. There's going to be undrafted guys looking for places to play.
Number 11, the Gary Souser Railcats in last place. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, Kevin, probably the most disappointing team in the league so far this year, 21-32 right now. Really, I guess, a team that you're just trying to see what went wrong here right now. And, I look at this team and I think that the pitching staff has just not developed, I think, the way that they were expecting to do. 5.08 ERA for themselves. They're not getting very timely hitting. They're not getting very impressive hitting, I guess. And, you talked about Winnipeg. We'll come to here in a moment, a couple weeks ago, about there's really nobody to go get out there. Maybe the undrafted guys are the saving grace for Gary right now.
It could be, you look at the pitching staff and you got Chris Irwin with a 4 ERA. You got Edward Quelo at a 4.06, but then it really drops down quite a bit after that. And we thought that the strength of this team was going to be in the starting pitching, and we're just not seeing it. And the bats are decent, but just not enough to hold up with the pitching that they've got.
Yeah, absolutely. And the starting staff really took it on the chin this week. I mean, and just had a very tough week out of that, starting with Julio Vivas, who had two abysmal starts for the club. And Harrison Francis pitched very well in his last outing, but started the week out with a terrible beginning for them, too. Pitched very well against Lincoln yesterday. So it is... It's an inconsistent. It's a young staff again. And I thought they were going to get some good news when it looked like Thomas Lumpkin was coming off the inactive list, but then went on the disabled list retroactive to back to May. So that did not really improve the team in any way, and that was a big loss for the team. Right? That was a big loss for the team because I think that they were hoping that he would come back, and he was telling us, Kevin, that he was hoping he was going to come back around this time. So I just don't know where there's help out there right now for the Railcats, and if there isn't any help, this is a team I think that's destined for last place.
It could be, now that you've got Lake Country, it looks like they want to be in the mix for a playoff spot. George Sams isn't just going to stand pat with Kane County. Then you got your top three teams with Milwaukee, Chicago, and Cleburne. I'm just not seeing a scenario right now where Gary Salcher is going to fit in when it comes to getting a playoff spot.
Speaking of maybe not fitting in here again, Winnipeg, last place in the West Division, 14 behind Kansas City for the top spot, 5.5 out for the final playoff spot for number 3/4/4 Lincoln Sioux City right now. I guess if I looked at Gary and Winnipeg, and I thought, well, which one of these teams has the best chance to get off the mat and get back up? I think if you're looking at players that are potentially out there who didn't get drafted, Winnipeg looks like, I guess, maybe a little bit more appealing option just because of the tradition and the history that they've had there. I mean, can reputation help this team out and get some guys maybe that another club may not be able to get, I guess, is the question, Kevin.
I'm not sure at this point, and I wonder if there's still – it shouldn't be an issue anymore because it's well done, but I wonder if players are still hesitant to want to go play up in Canada because of the whole COVID paranoia that seems to have left Canada a lot later than it left the USA. I don't know. Maybe that's not a possibility. Maybe that's not even an issue, but – I just don't know if Winnipeg holds that tradition right now, whereas guys are going to want to go play there just because it is Winnipeg.
I mean, I looked at the week for this team, Kevin. They went 1-5. They had a 2.93 ERA last week and came out of that 1-5. I mean, just abysmal hitting, barely above 200 for the week. I mean, I just don't really see any formidable weapon in this offense. And let's mention 2.93 ERA, Kevin, and you've mentioned they got hammered by Milwaukee on Friday, gave up 16 runs. Okay, so they're getting unreal pitching otherwise. But there's just no offense for this team. Jacob Boccoli came back after being out for a while, but Max Murphy's really playing very well, but not huge batting average. I don't know. I think that this team is in serious trouble, and I had them in last place. I had them at fifth to begin the season. I think they are the last place team in the West.
I think at this point you'd be right. It's not going your way when you brought in the Milwaukee Milkman with a short night of rest. You had a guy that was arguably your best pitcher with Travis Seabrook starting for you, and you end up giving up 16 runs in a game. That tells you right there that maybe the season's just not going as anticipated.
Well, I want to ask this question now because this was a very interesting announcement by the league and surprising to me. I'm just going to say. Okay, so the league announced today, Kevin, that there would be a futures tryout camp that would be conducted as part of the All-Star game here in Milwaukee. That's going to go on Monday from 8 to 2. And I'm assuming in some way that this was to those guys who weren't drafted or maybe didn't get enough consideration coming out of college or something to give a chance to show their skills before American Association, all these scouts and play coaches and managers that are there from all the teams and stuff like that to get looked at. $125, I thought, was a lot of money, first of all. Let's start with that. But, okay. But, I kind of looked at this and thought, are we really needing – I mean, this time of the season, are we really desperate to look for some guys? I mean, I guess I wasn't really sure what prompted this move.
Well, I think it's something you see around with other teams, too. I've heard of other teams having in-season tryouts, so I don't think it's a bad thing. It's although it's a little different to have him in the middle of the season, I don't think it's the worst idea, because give these guys a look, get them into what's a pretty good league instead of them going to play out in a rookie league. I guess if I was a rookie and I wanted to play against the best competition possible, I'd want to try for a spot in the American Association.
I hope it winds up getting some guys. 18 years or older is all you need to participate in this, and obviously you're $125 fee there. The camp will begin at you have to be there by 7 on Monday, and the camp itself will begin at 8.
I'm going to be in town. What do you think?
Yes. Yeah, and last I knew you were over 18. So yes, I think you ought to try it. Just
almost
to at least
three
do
times
that.
Now.
I think you ought to go for that for sure. So, and by the way, maybe, you know, this part right here might work out, Kevin. Maybe we should sign up for this thing, because for $125 to register, they do provide a hotel accommodation. So maybe that's our hotel right there for us if we say we're going to sign up and play. So give it a shot.
There you go.
I like it. I hope this winds up being something great. And maybe, you know, maybe it kind of leads to them having camps like this, training camps kind of thing before the season. The Frontier Leagues had a huge success with this thing, and they had a lot of guys that came out of there, some that made it to the, you know, affiliate ball, even to the major leagues, who got drafted out of this thing by teams in the Frontier League. So it could be something that would work out, and I hope that's the case. So,
I wonder if like all teams will have a representative there, or if only some teams will, or if it's up to each individual team.
They do not specify that. They do say that there will be major league scouts there, and you're going to have the Kansas City and Milwaukee. Yeah. So I don't. It doesn't say that they're going to have all of the teams represented, but you never know. Teams might come out there to check it out. It's a good opportunity to get to see some talent potentially there. Speaking of All-Star games, Kevin, you and I, before the show began, were talking about the skills competition that the Frontier League has instituted for their All-Star game this season. And some interesting ones, obviously a home run derby, but included in that is the precision hitting, catcher and outfielder throwing, and my personal favorite, the bunting award. I don't know how that's going to look like. I'm still wondering how a person celebrates being the top bunter.
I don't know what the trophy would look like for that. I don't know if it's like you get like a silver bat with like a hand halfway up the barrel, or what that entitles. And the outfielder throwing thing, you hope you get the smallest outfielder.
Well, that is going on, I think, as we speak. Their All-Star game is tomorrow. So that maybe I needed to get on Frontier League's TV feed and find out what's going on there. Because they're on, what's the thing that we use for hockey?
Flow Sports.
Flow Sports. Yeah, so I should go find out what's going on in that. But, top bunter. That's exciting stuff out there for sure. So, I don't mean to be disappointed. Oh, boy. Players of the Week. Manny Garcia is chosen the player of the week out of the league after hitting 500 with 2 homers and 5 RBI for the Empire State Grays. That team, I still believe, that's playing all of their games on the road. So I anytime a guy wins an award on that, I think that's a big deal. So congratulations to him. Colton Easterwood from the Gateway Grizzlies, chosen as the top pitcher in the Frontier League, goes with 3 saves and 7 strikeouts without allowing a hit nor a run this past week. So congratulations to those guys. We always like to see that kind of stats out there. In the standings, Kevin, the 8-2 over the last 10 Gateway Grizzlies, who hold a 1.5 game advantage over Schaumburg, hold the top record in the West. And in the East, the New Jersey Jackals are 3 games ahead of the New York Boulders in the East Division. And before we leap out of the Frontier League, Kevin, we were reading kind of an interesting story about attendance for the New Jersey Jackals, somehow still the top team in the division out there, but the move to a different stadium doesn't look like that was a particularly wise one on their part.
No, it hasn't. according to the story that was put out on NorthJersey.com, their attendance has plummeted by 45%. They're next to last, averaging almost 500 fans per game, fewer than the next to last team. And it looks like as of June 30th, they're averaging 756 fans per game. For those that don't know, they moved to from their Yogi Berra Stadium at Montclair State in New Jersey to basically a renovated former Negro Leagues ballpark that had become a track, and now it is back to being a track, and basically is not related too well to being a baseball stadium once again. So, you know, through all the years I've been involved, you know, in baseball, you get to know some people. So, talk to a friend of mine that's a Jackal fan before the show tonight, and he gave me some nuggets here. I just asked him, I said, what's happened to this team? And, you know, he says that the team is owned by Al Dorso, who he's made his money by running carnivals, like state fair-like carnivals in New Jersey. And he believes that they've used the Jackals as a business write-off. The team hasn't been marketed at all in the last decade. No, they do not reach out to the community. So this move to Patterson is where Al Dorso grew up. Apparently he saw it as a business opportunity and just thought that the fans would be on board with the move. Well, what's happened is fans that were fans of the Jackals at Yogi Berra Stadium, most of them did not make the move to Patterson. And Patterson is not coming out to support the team. Patterson is, let's just put it this way, it's not the safest city around. People don't really like to go there if they don't have to. Okay, so my connection said there's average usually around 400 fans. That's what they're announcing, but the actual average amount of people he will actually count is around 100 to 150. To park safely at the ballpark, it's $15 to park at a parking garage that the developers of the stadium built with the intent of having a monopoly on parking. You sit on benches there, but I've been told that they're not as uncomfortable as you'd think. So it was kind of strange. The owner was also interviewed by New York Times, and he actually blamed the fans that support the Jackals at Yogi Berra Stadium for the move to the new ballpark. Right now, the Jackals do not make any money off of concessions. The developers of the stadium negotiated the deal for that. Right now, the Jackals' only source of income at the ballpark are from ticket money and souvenirs. Well, if you're getting 150 fans a game, that's not really going to pay the bills. Wow. Apparently, they're understaffed. I asked about, are they running promotions? They had a Dominican Republic night there. Some fans that were Dominican showed up, asked, well, what are you doing tonight for Dominican Republic night? They were told, oh, nothing. They had a Star Wars night, no execution. They had a Pride night. Did not do much for that. And, you know, in that area, too, there are so many other options for baseball that it's tough. It's competition for the baseball dollar. And right now, with a team in a city that people are scared to drive to, people are not making the decision to go to the ballpark, Hinchcliffe Stadium. The ballpark itself, and this could explain your offensive numbers a little bit. Well, New Jersey has a very good team with Keon Barnum, who we all remember from the American Association. Right field is only 260 feet from home plate, and they put up like a 50-foot-high net that is kind of like their makeshift green monster. So apparently there's going to be a Negro Leagues tribute within the ballpark that's been put off. And it just really, it just does not sound like there's just being much effort put into making the team a success, which makes you wonder, how's the money coming in for this ball club and how long are they going to last?
You know, it's sad, Kevin, because this franchise has such a long history of success. You know, that's where Joe Calfapietra really made his mark as you know, an incredible independent manager. George Samus made his mark originally. And to see that kind of stuff go on, you're just shaking your head about it. And blaming fans, that's always a key to success, I think, to get them to come out to your park. So
here's one for you. And my friend says he's holding out for this to potentially happen. The Jackals have won a championship in the Northern League when the teams were combining to play East versus West championship. They won a championship in the Northeast League. They won a championship in the summer of 2020 when they had the combined teams. They won the championship in that league, whatever the championship challenge league was called. And they've won that's four leagues. So he's holding out hope that they can win a championship in the Frontier League. So that obviously there is no other team that has won championships in five different independent leagues. So he says, of all things, as poorly as the team's being ran, as depressing as the ballpark atmosphere is, he says he's still a fan, wants the team to do well, and he's holding out hope that maybe they can make history like that.
That would be pretty, I mean, even no matter how that works out, that's pretty impressive. That you have five different leagues you can win championships. Even four already, that's pretty impressive. You got to pat them on the back about that. So let's finish up with the Atlantic League, Kevin. Out there in the North Division, the Long Island Ducks tied with the York Revolution at 37-26. Both teams hold a 6.5-game lead over Southern Maryland. I believe that this league is like 10 games away from the midpoint of the season, which they go to first and second halves. Gastonia is still battling with High Point for the top spot in the South Division, both at 41-22 with a 10-game edge over Lexington. So this is really, at this point, a two-team race in both of the divisions to see who's going to be the first half winner. Right now, and since both are tied, it's not real easy to determine who that might be. No one holding any kind of edge right now. I think that covers us around the American Association. I'm trying to see if there was any other news that we had. I don't think that there was anybody that, other than John Nogalski, I don't think we had anybody else who jumped. Nogalski and Sermo headed for Mexico, and I don't think we had anybody else head for affiliate. Oh, no, that was it, Kevin. I think that's our spiel for this week. How are we feeling about what's going on at the 10th inning stretch?
Well, I came out with my usual Sunday Insider, which if you're looking for the power rankings and the justification for it, you can find it there. And I have to tell you, this is a little bit of a teaser, but don't know how I'm going to celebrate this, but I'm at 493 blogs, so I'm 7 away from 500. And I will tell you, 500 will be a doozy.
Oh, a cliffhanger for us. All right.
Number 500 could be an autobiography. Let's put it that way. A mini autobiography.
All right. I'm liking it. I'm going to hear the
whole
story.
Nobody else is ever
going
to write about me, so I'm going to have to do it myself.
I'm liking it. I'm liking the plan. Minor League Sports Department, we're just going to be continuing on stuff leading into the All-Star game. The crew will be out there next Monday and Tuesday, hopefully. So Jennifer Andreese will also come out to take pictures for us. And she's been on the road quite a bit this year, so congratulations to her. We like that because she takes awesome shots for us out there. And we want to give her a little pat on the back because Kevin and I have both been using her photos this year for our stuff that we've been writing on. And great action photos that you get, and I'm liking it a lot. I think that is that's it for this week, Kevin. So what are we? Who are we shouting out to this week?
Well, my shout out is going to be a week later than I wanted to, but I wanted to recognize the Lincoln Salt Dogs for thinking outside the box and doing their Taylor Swift promotion, where they somehow got their hands on a pair of Taylor Swift tickets and then proceeded to draw 8,293 fans or something like that to the game against Sioux City on June 30th. They had fireworks that night. They had, for the night, they were called the Swift Dogs with special Taylor Swift-themed jerseys. And if you read my blog this week, there seems to be a dearth of really thinking outside the box promotions. And I just thought that was just a really, really greatly executed promotion. So my shout out is to the Lincoln Salt Dogs and for their great promotion this week for June 30th.
I like that. That's a very good choice. I'm going to say that my shout out this week is to Kevin Lucco. Because not only doing a great job out there promoting American Association Baseball, but backfired up about his hometown Faribault Lakers and keeping in track of what's going on with them. And for a personal pat on the back for me that he gave me this week, came up with a minor league sports report, three stars of the game that he's starting to include as well. So I'm going to make this a selfish one and choose Kevin Lucco for this week. How about that?
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. And I'm sure you saw it. Nick Ross of the Faribault Lakers was pretty excited to get the number one star after their consolation championship victory on Sunday afternoon. And I kind of, with the team, I like to kind of lay back in the weeds a bit. I really don't know most of the guys very well. And I guess I want to kind of keep that air of mystery about me. So I can write about them as a team as opposed to knowing a bunch of guys. But as I was walking around after the game, I think it was Nick. He had his phone in his hand, and it was after I published the story. And I saw him with the phone, and he goes, "Oh, well, let's see, the results are in." And I think that's when he was looking to see who the three stars of the game were. So I'm glad the team is having fun with it. I'm having fun covering the ball club, giving back to my hometown. And you know, since I really don't have a local American Association team to cover anymore, it just gives my game writing a chance to stay, gives me a chance to stay on top of my game writing just in case that dream comes true and we get a American Association team back in Minnesota somehow, somewhere, or I move somewhere and go work for somebody. But it's been a fun ride, and I'm glad the guys are actually reading the game stories and looking forward to the vaunted Minor League Sports Report three stars of the game.
That's fantastic. Well, Kevin and I want to thank you all for coming out here and joining tonight's show. Next week we'll be back with our guest, hopefully another player or pitcher of the week for the team here as we for Monday night, I should rephrase this, because for Monday night, Kevin and I will come to you after the Home Run Derby. And hopefully we'll have the person who won the Home Run Derby give us a little chat with the two of us there so we can give their thoughts on winning that. I think it'd be better off if we chose somebody who got knocked out early. Maybe that'd be more entertaining. But then we will have the All-Star game. After the All-Star game, Kevin and I will come back with you and give our thoughts on the contest itself. And we will break down the first half of each of the teams heading into the second half of the season and talk about what our expectations are. So double header Monday and Tuesday night for us. there. So Kevin, I did give a little teaser before we pop out here that you and I would say who's going to win the game next Tuesday night. So should I go first, or you want to jump out here first?
Oh, have at it.
Okay, I'm going to go with the East winning 8-3.
I also agree. I'm going to go with the East, and it's going to be like I'm going to say a 7-2 score.
Liking it a lot. Once again, for Kevin Lucco, I'm Rob Pannier. We'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.